Warm up the duck boats and start singing Sweet Caroline. It's time for the Boston Breakdown. I'm Joe Braverman, and on this show, we discuss the biggest news and stories in the world of Boston sports. Everything from the Patriots,
let's go!
Red Sox,
can you believe it?
Bruins,
the Boston Bruins have won the Stanley Cup,
and Celtics. Game action, transactions, you name it, we'll discuss it. Now, it's time to break it down.
We have decided, or I have decided, that Jacoby Brissett will be our starting quarterback this season.
Well, I love that dirty water.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are back for another edition of the Boston Breakdown podcast. We're coming to you here on Thursday, August 29th. If you're listening when this episode releases, it is Friday, August 30th. This is episode number 26. You know we got to name a Boston athlete for it. I think there's only one famous 26 out there in the world of Boston sports. We know who it is. It's Wade Boggs. Yes, he was a Yankee. Majority Yankee, but he also has his number retired by the Sox. I mean, even before then, give some love to Brock Holt out there before he switched to number 12 before the 18th season. But 26, Wade Boggs, that's what we're going with. We got a lot to cover in this episode. Of course, we got the Patriots roster decisions. The Red Sox are still fighting for that wild card spot, and a little bit of Bruins news, even as we found out earlier in the week. But I think what everyone wants to talk about is legit what happened a couple of hours ago as we're recording, the fact that the Patriots have their quarterback for week one when they go to Cincinnati and they face the Bengals. Jerod Mayo has gone with Jacoby Brissett. Now, the way to get into this is that it's not a surprise, but it's also a surprise, because right after Jacoby Brissett signed, Jerod Mayo basically acknowledged that he's QB1. He's got the starter for right now unless something drastically changes. That's the unsurprising part. The surprising part is that they're sticking with this plan after seeing these guys in three preseason games, and I think enough footage to tell that Drake May is obviously the better quarterback than Jacoby Brissett. So it was a question of, do you want to throw this kid, May, into the fire so quickly? And I guess Jerod Mayo and the rest of the coaching staff didn't feel comfortable with, as we have said over and over, about this offensive line looking insanely bad. I mean, the fact that Jacoby Brissett had a little injury scare with the shoulder injury, maybe. I sort of look back to that specific play, and I think sort of in that way is what changed Jerod Mayo's mind. Not changed his mind, but just reaffirmed his decision that he saw the offensive line. He saw one of the Commanders players come out and rock Jacoby Brissett, and Brissett favoring that shoulder. So there was probably a little bit of hesitation with that. But the argument I make is that, you know, a couple of things. You know, I've said over and over that the way to learn is to get these live game reps. You know, only a handful of times have we seen a high draft pick, you know, sit on the bench for someone else and they actually learn and they benefit from it. Only a handful of times. The second thing is that Drake May, I'm not going to say like he's incredibly elusive and he's smart enough to know that that defender was coming, but he's at least athletic enough where he has the ability to maybe avoid, not saying injuries are avoidable, but there would have been a higher chance to maybe not be crushed the way that Jacoby Brissett was on that hit. And, you know, he did tell WEEI Afternoons that he's fine, you know, just precautionary. He's 100%. He'll be good to go. And that's what I was thinking, too, when he took that hit, is this, they were just taking him out for precautionary, because obviously, you know, let's be honest, like, we all like Joe Milton. He's made some pretty exciting plays, but him as the backup probably is not the smart thing to do on this opening day roster. You know, it's nice to have a veteran in there. So that's sort of where I am with the quarterback decision. Would I have loved to have seen Drake May? Of course. You understand the plan. You don't have to like the plan, as I've said over and over and over. You know the plan. You don't have to like it. And you can obviously disagree. But in considering that this is a multi-year rebuild, you know, this team isn't going to light the world on fire just like that. They're taking every precautionary step that they can because they know this is a multi-year rebuild, and they have a couple flashes on some other positions, but they want to be absolutely certain to get Drake May in at the right time. You don't want to shake his confidence. And he seems like a confident guy. He even said, you know, in the locker room when the media access got there today that, you know, his confidence isn't shaken. He's not worried. He's still happy about how he performed. And I think sort of in the back of his mind, he knows that he's going to be the guy moving forward, that his time as the backup sitting on the bench is not going to be a long time. He will get in there sooner rather than later, whether that's this year or it's next year, it's halfway through the year, who knows? But Drake May will be the guy. He's proven it to me, and I hope he's proven it to all the Patriots fans that this kid can play. I mean, just watching him in that primetime game on Sunday, I mean, I don't have to go through the whole preseason because I think he's shown enough. The fact that he can move the offense so well and that his ability to make plays on the run, you know, some people were comparing that throw that didn't count, the touchdown where he was running to his left and he threw sort of across his body. It was kind of like Aaron Rodgers-esque, not saying he's going to be that same player, but he's showing those flashes that he can make those kinds of plays. And I think that has to give you a lot of confidence. It's got to make you feel good that as of now, they made the right decision to pick this guy as their future quarterback. And obviously they don't want to, as I said, throw him into the fire now because you don't want him killed by that offensive line, which continues to just be shuffled around. I mean, who even knows who's going to be at left tackle? I mean, when you think about it, the left tackle is probably in the top five of most important positions in football, right up there with the quarterback. You know, it's important, and obviously they didn't address it, so it's their own fault. It's Elliott Wolf's fault. And, you know, they probably do want to see Drake May at some point. I guess the question to me then would be, how long of a leash does Jacoby Brissett have? Does he play so badly enough that it's time for Drake May to get in there? Or can Jacoby sustain himself through the regular season? Because this is a guy who hasn't, you know, only a handful of times, I think maybe one or twice, has completed a full season as a starter without being hurt or without being benched. So that's all you're asking for, Brissett. You know, I think he knows it. I think everyone else knows it when he got signed, that he is just the placeholder. And how long does he go in that spot? Who knows? Honestly, who really knows? I mean, me, if I was Jerod Mayo, I would have been starting Drake May right away. But of course, you always have those red flags and you have those precautionary tales that they are obviously looking at with the offensive line and the rest of the offense, which is still pretty much a development right now. So it makes sense why they went with Brissett. I don't like it. I would have gone the other way, but let's be honest. Even if May was in there, this wasn't a high projected win team. If you're asking me, this is not a team where if you switch quarterbacks, it's going to give you a 6-win increase. You know, this is still a team that's probably going to finish last in the AFC East. They're probably going to have a top 10 for sure, maybe a top 5 pick. You know, it's just a matter of just dealing with the rebuild. And that's what teams do. And of course, for me and my generation, we're not used to these rebuilds when you're talking Patriots football. So used to a guy wearing number 12 and hosting that Lombardi trophy at some point in February. But it's something to learn with. But of course, quarterback is the only decision that was made. The cuts list came out. They finally narrowed it down to 53. A couple of surprises for me just looking at it. One is in the offensive line, speaking of, you know, Antonio Maffi, one of the Belichick picks from last year, was cut. And to me, that was a little surprising because I feel like the offensive line is something where you want to have as much depth as possible. I mean, I guess they trust Michael Jordan, not that Michael Jordan, the different one. They trust that Cole Strange is going to be back. Even though City So got hurt in that last preseason game, they trust him. You know, Nick Leverett as the backup center. You know, I kind of disagree with like how the offensive line is being treated. I don't know if I would have cut Mafi like that. You know, maybe he gets on the practice squad. Who knows? But a couple of other ones. You know, the kicker, not surprising at all. Chad Ryland. I mean, we do have to give him his flowers here for Patriot Nation because he did help with a couple of missed field goals get the Patriots that number three pick and eventually wind up with Drake May. But it was clear, obvious in the kicking competition that Joey Sly was going to win that job. I mean, he was getting the majority of the kicks early on, and he feels, you know, much more trustworthy. You know, if there's a 50-plus yard field goal or anything like that, you trust him to get it done. So I do like Joey Sly. I think he's a good pick. Sean Way is a little bit surprising to me. You know, the secondary in me has a little bit of a concern there. You know, Christian Gonzalez hasn't looked the same as he did last year. Of course, he could be recovering from that injury, but the secondary I feel like needs like a little bit of depth, and I thought Sean Wade would have been one of those guys to do that. Same with David Wallace. Wallace was getting well, first off, big fan of Megan Ottolini's. She absolutely loves David Wallace as like a special teams depth piece. But of course, like with I was going to say Jalen Reagor, but he got cut too. But, you know, they must trust like Marcus Jones or whoever else with those options. You know, so it was a little surprising. He had some good flashes, you know, in those garbage time minutes there. And then Bailey Zappe, again, unsurprising to me. Like, the writing was on the wall once Joe Milton was drafted and Brissett was signed. I mean, Zappe was a good little story. He had his little 15 minutes of fame when the fans were chanting his name. You know, they won that game a couple of years ago against Detroit. And he was basically the guy who was cheered because he was not Mac Jones at the time. But let's be honest. He's not an NFL caliber. I should say he's not an NFL starting quarterback. I shouldn't say that because, you know, if you're playing in an NFL game, nonetheless, you know, you're doing something right. So Bailey Zappe just isn't the guy. He's not someone, who is a good starting quarterback to have. You only have him on, for a depth piece. And, you know, maybe Kansas City can make him a journeyman backup like they've done so many times with a guy like Chase Daniels. But Zappe has a better chance of getting a ring, at least if he's on the Chiefs practice squad, if you're asking me. But we're going to get more into the Patriots next week when we talk about their season preview, because we'll be less than a week from their season opener on that Sunday. So we're going to get deep into that. But the Patriots aren't the only talk of the town. It's the Red Sox, and it's been, my goodness, it's been a roller coaster for the guys who play at Fenway Park. I mean, what has gone on in the past week or so since we last talked has been, I'm just going to say, not great, to say the least. Getting swept by the Arizona Diamondbacks at home was definitely a killer. Definitely a killer. They should have at least taken one of those games, probably two, a lot of winnable games in there. But then you pile that on top with the supposed doubleheader against Toronto. That's very, very silly, which that's a story for another time or a future speak on it. The fact that this suspended game, which was the day game, goes down in the record books as the game back in June rather than right now. So technically the Sox would have lost in the record books. They've lost four straight, but five straight is realistic because they dropped both games against the Blue Jays. And it's really, really tough to see them go through that kind of stretch, because it feels like, you know, when the pitching is going really well, your offense is now cold. Vice versa, in the previous weeks where your offense is playing well, your pitching staff is in shambles and the bullpen is just getting lit up one after another. But they were able to salvage themselves with a couple of games, two straight wins these past couple of nights, and they've gained ground. They picked up two games with these victories, because now they're chasing the Royals and the Twins. They're basically in a tie for that final wild card spot. So it's a, you're essentially chasing two teams instead of one, which to me, I feel really, really good about, because Kansas City is a team that does scare me a little bit. They've got a really good offense. I mean, Bobby Witt Jr. is a superstar, and they've got a really good pitching staff in that rotation. So Kansas City, to me, is someone you can't catch. I feel like Minnesota is much more catchable, because I just feel like, you know, they're kind of like a fraudish team, where there was a time where they were division leaders and they were playing really, really well. But I just can't trust the lineup to produce every single night like they are. You know, granted, I don't follow the Twins as much, but I just know from recent history, they're a team that you can't catch. And to see the Sox be able to get the ground they lost back, you know, this is a season of woulda, shoulda, couldas if they don't make the playoffs. You know, there's multiple games you look back on. A couple games with the Yankees, during the Astros, against the Dodgers, so on and so on. And but there still is a little bit of hope. Of course, they've got one more in Toronto. They've got a Detroit team where, yes, they're over 500, but that's still much easier than facing the Astros, the Orioles, Yankees, that gauntlet of a schedule they went through. You know, I think the Mets are a winnable series. And they split with the Orioles a couple of weeks ago when they come back, when they eventually play each other again. So the confidence is back to me. The confidence is back. I was so ready after that doubleheader to say, yep, the season's over and they're not going to make the playoffs. They were sitting five and a half games back of that wild card. And then they turn it around and they're taking advantage of this hard stretch of games for the Royals and with the Twins. Twins playing the Braves, old friend Chris Sale. Thank you very much. And then the Royals playing the Guardians, who are leading the division right now. So, you know, I'm feeling good again, you know, and ultimately the big goal was just to play competitive baseball in the last month of the season in September. And it looks like we're going to get that. We're going to get that at some point, unless there's a huge losing streak that comes around for the Sox, which, knock on wood, we hope does not happen. But I'm feeling really, really good about where they are. I mean, Brian Bayo's start last night, undoubtedly the best of his career, undoubtedly went the furthest he's ever gone. 8 innings, only 2 hits. And the beauty for me is I was producing that game for WEEI, and I got to hear a lot from Will Fleming, from Lou Maloney, from Sean McDonough, and they were all saying, which I noticed as well, Bayo working at that faster pace. He's sort of trying to find the groove that works best. Now, this could just be a Toronto team that's a streaky team, but only 2 hits to this team, only 1 walk, I believe, he gave up. That was pure dominance. And this is a Red Sox squad that is built on momentum. And as they say, you're only as good as your next game starting pitcher. So you're hoping that the rest of the rotation can come through on this. You're hoping Tanner Houck can build off of that. Cutter Crawford, Nick Pivetta, and then whoever that fifth starter is going to be, if it's Criswell, if it's Rich Hill, they're hoping they can build off that. And the bullpen's getting better. You know, Justin Slayton is back. He makes a huge difference. So now your back end of the bullpen is set once again with Chris Martin, Slayton, and then Kenley Jansen in the 9th, taking a lot of pressure off of these other guys like Zach Kelly, like Brandon Bernardino. Yes, your trade deadline pieces are on the injured list right now, but Boozer's going to be back. I trust Lucas Sims. I don't know if I trust Luis Garcia, and Liam Hendricks is on his way back. He's almost here. And if he's back in this bullpen, and he's pitching the way he is, like in his rehab starts, watch out, because this bullpen and this pitching staff will be back to full strength and back to its lethal self like it was in the first half. And the pitching will finally sort of right the ship from all the chaos they've had since the All-Star break. But plenty of baseball left, plenty to talk about, and the race is far from over. Don't get me wrong, that race is far from over. But then the last thing I want to get to before we get off of here is a little bit of a developing story here regarding the Bruins and Jeremy Swayman. Now, for those that don't know, Jeremy Swayman still looking for a new contract, and we are a couple weeks away from them opening up camp and practice, and he still does not have a deal. And it's clear that both sides are talking, but I got to give some love for my man, Rich Keefe, produced many of his Rich Keefe shows and on his Red Sox coverage. He's going to do great with Adam Jones in that new spot in the midday, Jones and Keefe. But Scoops Keefe, back at it again. He says that Jeremy Swayman's looking for $10 million. Now, this is all about leverage, as all contract negotiations are. This is all about leverage. And the idea for him is that he sees what the roster has done. He saw that Don Sweeney traded away Linus Allmark and has put all his eggs into his basket. Jeremy Swayman is going to be that guy. And Swayman knows that. And Swayman knows how great he was in that postseason run for the Bruins. I mean, where would they have been? Would they have gotten out of the first round with Linus Allmark in net instead of Jeremy Swayman? I say no. Would they have been competitive with the Panthers in that second round series without him? I'd say no. And he knows that as well as everyone else. So he's saying that I'm one of the top line goaltenders out there in the NHL, and I feel like I should be paid like it. And the $10 million that he's looking for is up there with some of the best goaltenders out there, like Bobrovsky, you know, you name it. That's his side. The other side is that the Bruins don't have cap space for $10 million. So Don Sweeney and the rest of the front office is looking at him saying, I know you want $10 million, but our cap can barely hold $7 million. So I sort of lean on the front office's side of this because contractually, it's not going to work. It's not going to work unless you trade some of these guys. And unless Swayman's going in there saying, I want $10 million, make the space, then there's no way he's going to get $10 million. And also, just to keep in mind, you know, Swayman is also trying to capitalize on the first, basically, he's going into his first year of full-time starter. You know, he's been back and forth with Allmark pretty much since he's come up from Providence in his career. So he's trying to capitalize on that. You know, it's kind of similar to the Matthew Judon situation. Yeah, he might be worth the money, but you want to see him perform as well as he has in the past to get that pay bump. So I think eventually both sides will meet in the middle because I do think there is a mutual, they want to get a deal done. They do want to get a deal done. I fully believe. I believe Swayman wants to stay. I believe the front office wants him in Boston. But to come out and say $10 million, I think is just absolutely unfeasible. And I know it's Swayman trying to maximize himself as much as he can, but he's not going to get $10 million even. He had to look at the situation. You know, I'm not sure exactly who his agent is, but I'm sure that, you know, he had to have looked at the cap situation and understand that $10 million was just not going to be possible. You know, maybe he gets that in the future, but right here, right now, $10 million for Jeremy Swayman is not going to be worth it. Not at all. So that's where I am with Swayman. Hopefully we get a deal done because I want to see that number one in the black and gold in between the pipes when the Bruins start their season in October. So hoping and praying that a deal gets done between Neely, Sweeney, Swayman, all of them. Get this guy in net. Please don't let Jeremy Swayman hold out. Because, yeah, they made a lot of additions, but this team goes nowhere if he is not in net. So there's going to be a lot to get into, and luckily we've got all the time in the world to do it. Except for this episode, because we got to sign off here on the Boston Breakdown. Thank you, everyone, for watching us on YouTube. If you are, like, subscribe to the channel. Follow us on all our social media pages, Facebook and Instagram. Just search Boston Breakdown Pod. You're listening to us, Spotify, Apple, wherever it may be. Hit the subscribe button. Like it. Give it 5 stars. Give it a brand spanking awesome review. It will be great. We've got episode 27 coming up next week. As I said, Patriots season preview, Red Sox potentially even closer to that playoff spot. And maybe Jeremy Swayman gets signed. I mean, if Lonnie Walker can come here and make the Celtics that awesome on the minimum deal that he has, which, by the way, Brad Stevens, well done, sir. Maybe all of that can happen, but there's going to be a lot of sports in the greatest sports city in the world. to talk about. And as I said, plenty of time to do it. But until then, Joe Braverman here, signing off from episode 26 of the Boston Breakdown Podcast. We'll see you next time for episode 27. So long.
This is our city.